Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
April 2nd, voters in Salisbury's Council 2 district could dramatically alter the direction of city government. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. What was a stunning primary outcome, the challenger Jake Day racked up around 846 votes to that of the incumbent, two-term council vice president Debbie Campbell, who garnered around 320. And coming in third was Jack Heath with 218. And District 2 is a large district that includes most of the city, except for the West Side neighborhood. Also runs east of Salisbury Boulevard from East Main Street to East College Avenue. Because of the staggered elections, Campbell's seat is the only one that's up for the general election in that district. And we have in the studio Council Vice President Debbie Campbell. Welcome to the program, first
of all.
Thank
you so much.
Well, let me ask you this, because I mentioned the results, which I will say surprised me. And I saw a quote, I guess, of you saying, I hope people that support me that didn't show up that day realize what's at risk and will show up at the general election. Let me just ask you, why do you think we got the results that we did in the primary? I mean, because the last time out, actually, when you ran for reelection, you did very, very well.
Well, I can only speculate. I will be very honest with you and tell you that because of a family medical situation with my dad, which has resolved itself now, I did not campaign during the primary season because I was needed by my parents. So I went and I helped my parents. And as I said, that's had a good outcome. And now I'm out campaigning as usual.
Do you think that given the size of it, which is one thing that struck me, does that indicate a mood of the electorate? I mean, one of the things that came to me was, well, maybe this is an anti-incumbent. Maybe there's, I mean, what is it that, or were they just voting for Jake? I mean, how do you read that?
I've talked to people who said, oh, I didn't vote in the primary. I've talked to people who said, I didn't vote in the primary because there was only one seat open. People have excuses for not going to vote. And I believe that voting is one of the most important things that we do. We need to own our government. We need to own the results of elections. And I think that turning out is very important. And that's been my message to people.
So what is your vision? As you've had 8 years now, you're moving forward.
Yes.
What is your vision for the city going forward?
My vision for the city is to position itself to be very competitive when the economy recovers. And I think, actually, I wrote down some numbers, if you'll forgive me here, that
sure,
I think people would probably be interested in. And that is, if you compare fiscal 11 to fiscal 12 in the city's net position, which is the equity that the city has, it's up 11.69%. Our cost of providing services, our cost of functions is down 6.83%. So even in a down economy, this council that people want to call the council of no has made your city flourish financially. And we have great new things happening. I mean, how long have we been trying to get the police department fully funded so that we would stop losing officers? That's done. We had a proposed tax increase that I think would have been very detrimental to both local businesses and residents. You know, every time you raise taxes, you put another small business out of business. You make another family choose between groceries or medication and their housing expense, whether they're owners or renters. So we saved tax increase. River's Edge, which I brought you a picture of. I don't know how familiar you are with it, but this is what it looks like now, the failed condo on West Main Street. And there's the rendering of what will happen. And that will be a campus with three buildings, artisan housing that will be affordable with 10 units set aside for people with disabilities, which is great. It'll have live workspace, gallery space, studio space. The first proposal for that we said no to would have required a subsidy from the city taxpayers. This one, which is also a far superior project, required nothing other than a letter of support, no subsidy from the city taxpayers, and a far superior result. So I think that we've shown that sometimes no is the right answer. You have to have the courage to say no, and you have to have the courage to drive for improvement. I think you've seen it with the only Bateman intersection, where we ended up partnering in a very meaningful way with the university. We got a much better outcome, and it cost the city taxpayers much less. We really need to focus on bringing jobs. That's what's going to make the difference for Salisbury, good jobs. And I think that we have a great opportunity to do that.
Let's turn to the concept of the culture of no, council of no.
Sure.
Since you brought it up. First of all, how do you respond to that? But second of all, beyond the particulars, there is a perception nonetheless. And it's not just the paper, but it's the people who will watch the council meetings.
Right.
And they say, gee, we like the incumbent, but we're tired of this as far as they see, and therefore maybe we want somebody else because we have this perception of the council. How do you respond to that?
Well, first I would say that no is not a bad word. You know, no kept you from having a tax increase. No kept you from having run-of-the-mill subsidized housing on a valuable riverfront parcel and got you this instead. You know, no is the right answer sometimes. And so it doesn't bother me to be known as having the strength and the fortitude to say that when it's the right answer. To get to the other piece of your question, you know, that's not really a bad thing either, because I can only control my behavior and I haven't behaved badly. If you watch some of these forums and things, I think that you will see where some of the bad behavior is coming from, and it's not from me. And again, even in a tumultuous situation, I've managed to get a good outcome for you. I managed to work with everyone to get the raises, the salary adjustments, whatever you want to call them, for the police department. Every time we lose an officer, it costs us $70,000 to replace them. Unanimous. Even though the council was able to fully fund virtually every program that the mayor asked for in this year's budget without raising your taxes, because I identified significantly understated revenues, the mayor still threatened to veto the budget. You know, sometimes there's somebody in a group who just wants to pick a fight. And so I think that you have to separate the way that you look at that. And you have to look at the people. Saying no is not picking a fight. Saying no is having the strength to say no when no is the right answer. Picking a fight is something different.
Let me finally find out with this observation. Some people will look at these council sessions and things will return. You'll say no to something, it might come back. Eventually it may go through. And one can certainly walk away with the perception that is taking far too long to get something done, whether it's in any given project, or in some cases, and we'll talk about some of the proposed legislation, something hasn't actually been acted upon. How do you deal with that perception? Put aside how effective you might be, but
right,
nonetheless, as you watch the council meetings, you say, gee, you know, I thought I heard this like last week, or, you know, 2 weeks ago or a month ago. It's just taken a long, long time. How do you deal with that? Is that the sense that something's not happening here?
Well, you know, often you'll get something to the council table, and when you get there, you'll either have new information sitting there on the table from the administration, or something that you have been promised won't be there, and you have to pull it. Or someone will raise a legitimate question about the legality of something. You know, when we pass a piece of legislation, it's important that it be legally defensible. So that takes things back to work sessions sometimes. I will say that when I checked, I don't know, it's probably been a couple of months ago, I looked, and the fact of the matter is we have passed 190 out of the 200 resolutions that were presented to us at that time, and 80 out of 90 ordinances. So we do get it done. And 9 times out of 10, it is because we don't have the information that we need. And you know, the fire service agreement, let's take that as an example. It's been expired now for a couple of years. And the fire services agreement is a huge issue for the city taxpayers. Because what it does is it's the mechanism by which the county compensates the city for the EMS and hazmat sorts of services that we provide outside of the municipal boundaries. It has a big price tag. And to not have renegotiated that contract means that the city taxpayers are paying a disproportionate amount to deliver those services into the county. And the council will have to approve the contract once it's negotiated. So we wanted to know about the status of the contract. And the report was that, we're getting ready to talk to the county. Well, what are the negotiation points? Well, we're going to do what we had in mind in 2008. Well, Don, it's 2013. The complexity and the expense of providing that service have changed significantly. So we ask that be on the work session agenda formally for an upcoming meeting. And when it was, the mayor told Mr. Pick, who is the one negotiating the contract, that he could not remain in the room and talk with us, that he had to get up and leave the work session until we finished that discussion, even though this contract will have to be approved by the council. So there is a lack of willingness on the part of the administration to come in and sit down and work cooperatively with the council. I have personally tried to meet with the mayor about this. I've tried to have he and the council president sit down with someone who is a mediator who they both know so that they would be on equal footing and to work through that. And at first they both agreed, and then the mayor canceled and has never agreed to come back. So do we have problems? Yeah, we do. And, I would point to the administration in many instances, and sometimes because we are a thoughtful council, we do find things, and at those times, it's the right thing to do to send it back. But when something's time sensitive, we'll make a special accommodation to get it on the agenda and get it done.
When it turned out to downtown,
okay.
I've been watching downtown for a long time, so have you. And it seems, I don't know whether things have gotten necessarily worse. I mean, there's some businesses that have moved out. Lots of discussions about trying to get it forward, trying revitalization. The mayor certainly has offered up his own proposal. There are other proposals been on the table. Have you seen any real progress in terms of downtown revitalization to this point? And what do you see is needed to revitalize that piece of real estate that has been the discussion for such a long time?
Well, I think the first thing is people with money to spend.
And how do you get them there?
How do you get them? Because while the city has grown, so has our poverty rate. Every time you raise taxes or create a new fee, people have less money to spend with your local businesses. So, and that's not just downtown; that's all of your businesses. Of course, River's Edge will create a gateway to the Arts and Entertainment District, and what I envision is being able to bring traffic off of Route 50. That one block, in fact, the developer has said that he will help to promote that concept, to bring people that one block so that they can go into the studio space and enjoy that, and then hopefully drive them across the little historic drawbridge into downtown, into some of our restaurants, maybe to EVO Brewery, maybe to the zoo, maybe to the Ward Museum, and then back out onto the highway to go for the rest of their vacation. Downtown, generally, what people don't understand is that the council has already endorsed the streetscape plan that was advanced by Urban Salisbury and developed by Max Verbitz. That's already done. Some of the parking lots that have been such a source of news, if you can call it that.
Great debate.
They've already been surplus. They were surplus several years ago. So the public is left with a pretty serious false impression about some of these things. I think, again, to create a sense of turmoil where turmoil doesn't necessarily exist. The long-term health of downtown, if you're asking me, do I support 500 units of subsidized housing downtown, taking the EDUs, the water and sewer units from Linens of the Week, and creating an EDU-free zone downtown. It's like another developer reimbursement. And no, I don't. I believe that those EDUs should either be used on that parcel to bring jobs to a neighborhood that desperately needs jobs, or that those EDUs should be used as an incentive for either an existing employer or a new one to create more jobs.
Do you, by the way, there's one proposal that's out there, I think it was by Joe Albero, who's running for mayor, who suggests that you should create basically an entertainment district in downtown. Do you agree with that as a concept? I mean, it's not a new concept either.
I mean, it's a concept. It's one that I haven't explored, so I think it would be premature for me to comment on it. I do think I know, in fact, that the downtowns that you see across the country that are most viable are destinations for one reason or another. Now, you know, at one point the university talked about putting its glass blowing operations in the old firehouse. If you had River's Edge at one end as an artisan complex with performances and things, and you had the glass blowing facility at the other, you know, you might be able to connect those things in a niche market kind of way. An entertainment district, I wouldn't be opposed to exploring it. You know, one of the perceived impediments to downtown flourishing is paid parking. And so I've suggested that we do a one-year pilot where we have free parking downtown for customers. We would have to figure a way to manage employees so that, you know, you don't have employees taking up all of the parking that's meant for your customers. But run it for a year and look at what it does or doesn't do to revenues of downtown businesses. And if it's as successful as the opponents of paid parking say it will be, then you will have more than made up the revenues that you would lose. And if it's not, then you look at a different solution. But I'm not afraid to try things that may drive a better outcome.
Let me ask you, by the way, before we leave downtown, talking about the parking lots, do you favor selling them off?
No.
Well, then what do we do? Do we keep them there, and is there something else we can do with them other than?
Well, the reason that I say that I don't favor selling them, I certainly don't favor selling them in the way that's being proposed right now.
Okay.
Because when the proposal was brought to the council, we raised the question of what are the demographics that you're going to take out with these parcels when you market them so that people will know the value of coming to Salisbury? They'll know how many people are employed at the university. They'll know how many people are employed at the hospital. Those the assets that Salisbury has that would draw somebody to want to do development on one of those parcels. Oh, well, we don't have any of that, was the response. We expect the bidders to do that. We shouldn't be selling city assets for pennies on the dollar, and that seems what we always do. You know, we buy what we want. When we want a parcel, we pay top price for it. But when we sell our assets, which are yours too, we sell them for pennies on the dollar. And, you know, over and over again, these developer subsidies have not worked. Look at the two failed TIFs. Look at the old mall, the TIF.
Mm-hmm.
What did we get for that? A pile of rubble. Look at the Idelot Farm one in bankruptcy. Subsidies are not the answer. And again, this sort of thing proves it.
Let me ask you about in terms of cities that the property owns. We got the Bricks and Linens of the Week. Now, remember the vote with the Bricks, and the council majority said, no, we don't want to go with the proposal that the mayor had. And I guess people say, well, fine enough. So it's still sitting there. What do you do with those pieces of property? I mean,
I love this question. The council asked the mayor to have the Bricks surplus so that we could get rid of it, and he has refused. He said, we'll wait until after the election. So there's another difference. I can pretty much guarantee you that if I'm not back in my seat, $1.8 million will be spent to put, what, 8 or 9 one-bedroom units of affordable housing in the Bricks. The price for that is driven through the roof by the fact that you're trying to stuff a use into that building for which it was not intended, and some of the historical stuff that goes along with that building, and the sources of the money. I suggested, you know, we have the property that's catty-cornered. It was a forfeiture years ago, and it's now the Neighborhood Services and Code Compliance Office. And it's a really nice building. I suggested that we sell that building and put that back on the tax rolls and take the proceeds from selling it, renovate the bricks as office space, and move Neighborhood Services over there and leverage the success on one corner onto another. It would be much more affordable because it's a more practical use of the space. And that was not supported for whatever reason. And that's when the council said, well, then let's surplus it. Let's sell it. Let's get it back on the tax rolls. Because every time we take something like that, we take it off the tax rolls too. Linens of the Week, it was not a gift. But once we, you know, once there was a majority vote to accept it, it was accepted. So it is a city property. Now we have to deal with it. And I've supported doing what needed to be done to clean it up. The mayor would like to see several units of Habitat housing built there. And I love Habitat. I'm the work that I've done in affordable housing. It's not that. It's that you do not build homes for financially fragile families on a once toxic site, because the purpose of putting them in a home is to help them to build an asset. And when they get ready to sell that house, it's not going to be a competitive choice for buyers in the way that other houses will be. And so I don't think that that's a good idea. And again, I would like to see that parcel and its EDUs. It's got about 120 right. EDUs used to attract either jobs to that neighborhood, or if you can't do that, and I'm not convinced that you can't. I mean, I would be willing to give that parcel away for jobs, because that's a long-term investment in the viability of the city and in breaking the cycle of poverty for families in a very poor neighborhood. And if we can't do that, if that's not incentive enough, then like I said, use those EDUs to create jobs elsewhere in the city. And then we can talk about the next best use for that parcel.
I want to talk about rental units. The first time I became acquainted with you was with the great battle over 4-2, which would limit the amount of number of unrelated people.
It was just getting back to a lawful use.
That's right.
Is really what it was. But
obviously it expanded to 4-3. The mayor has had a proposal about amortization, about three strikes. I think you guys did pass the Tenants' Bill of Rights.
We did.
Where is that legislation? I mean, because it's been a few years, and I guess we're all kind of wondering, like, what happened to it? Because it, I mean, and did you, by the way, did you have some input into that as well? Because I remember you being at one of the.
I did have some input into that as well. We did pass the Tenants' Bill
right.
of Rights. I have pushed ferociously for that to happen for years, and I'm glad that we've got a council that had the political will to get it done. I just lost my train of thought.
Amortization and three strikes.
I don't think that amortization is necessarily the right solution, if you will. There are some units that have been converted illegally.
Right.
And if it's a unit that has been converted illegally, it has to go. Illegal is illegal. But the mayor and I differ in our views on amortization.
In what sense?
Well, if you have a property that has always been legally conforming,
mm-hmm.
and now it's going to be amortized out of existence, and its use is not incompatible with the community around it, why does that make sense? It seems to me to be too much of a broad brush way of getting at something. And then on the three strikes ordinance, yes, I did work on that. It has taken a long time. Much of that work was done with the old city attorney. Once we got the new city attorney, he found a number of flaws with it. The mayor has told me that if we change it, he will veto the bill. And so we have something that has elements that don't seem to be legally defensible. And so what are we to do? I mean, we want to crack down on habitual offenders. We have to. But again, we have to have that cooperative effort And we can't get the mayor to come sit down with us. So let's, I want to see it done. I want to see it done, but it has to be done in a way that's legally defensible.
Let me ask you the projection to the future then. When do you think those two elements might actually get completed? I mean, it's been a while.
Well,
so that's what people are sort of asking. So, well, gee, when?
When the administration makes a priority along with the council to get to yes on it. I mean, I think that you have a council that wants to get to yes on that. As soon as possible.
Now, one of the other things that I actually found rather interesting, I sort of talk a little bit about politics, and it is Jake Day has gotten a number of endorsements. Jim Perdue, I guess, has lent his name, but also there were a couple of prominent real estate folks. Jim Ireton has certainly come out in support. As Barry Tillman apparently has, I think she may have been contributed some money, but I think she also has been supportive of him as well. Explain the politics here, because at one time you and Jim, the mayor, were strong allies. At least it seemed the way. What do you make of this?
I don't know I don't know what to make of it. And tomorrow is always another day. So we'll see. You know, we were friends for 20 years. So I don't know why he's behaving like this. And I have done everything that I know to do to try to talk to him, to try to reach some understanding that a disagreement on policy isn't a personal thing.
What about the others?
You want to talk about the endorsements?
Yeah, what about the endorsements?
Well, I haven't taken any money from any special interest groups. Mm. You know, I think that what people need to look at is that the last time that we saw these kinds of political maneuvers, if you will, it was the notion of a clean sweep that gave us what was later dubbed the Dream Team Council. That Dream Team Council did just what Jake Day and Jim Ireton are saying they're going to do, which is the mayor needs a partner, a.k.a. I'm going to rubber stamp what the mayor wants. The last time we had that, it got us a failed wastewater treatment plant. It got us developer reimbursements in the tens of millions of dollars. I mean, I would venture a guess that the price tag was over $100 million. And it took the city to the brink of financial disaster. And so the question for the voters is, do they want the promise of, oh, we'll just rubber stamp so that everybody can get along, and the price tag that comes with it? Because again, it just about drove us to financial disaster. Or are they, you know, do they appreciate having somebody who will say no when no is the right answer, and having the kind of financial results that I just shared with you, and having this sort of development starting to come to the city, starting to get to yes on some things that in the past had been very contentious? You know, this council has been together for 2 years. The first year, probably, we spent cleaning up the backlog that had been left by the former council. And so we've had about a year to get some pretty significant things done. The police increases is huge, plus the election redistricting, lots and lots of meaningful work. The Tenants' Bill of Rights, as you said. So I think that there's a clear choice. And, you know, if you rubber stamp what the mayor gives you, you're going to have a tax increase. You're going to have the bricks. You're going to have developer subsidies. You're going to have all of the things that once you realize the price tag that went along with that, as voters, you said, we don't want that. You elected me, and I can say that I have kept every promise that I have made in moving the agenda forward.
Real quickly, you only got about 30 seconds left. Are you supporting somebody for mayor?
Absolutely not. That's not my job. The voters need to educate themselves. They need to pick. And I will work as their servant, as their partner, with whoever they send as the administrator of the city.
Oh, we were speaking with Vice President Debbie Campbell, Vice President of the Salisbury City Council. And we've also, of course, previously talked to her challenger, Jake Day. You're listening to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Cora Mitchell is our volunteer producer. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.